interesting. I wonder what it is about today. We had 26 people for meditation, and now we only have 20. You never know. There's like can be something going on. Is there like a football game today?
Everyone got worn out by starting early.
maybe that.
Jim had to go get her vaccine, so she left.
Cool. All right. Well, I will go around and say hello to everybody, starting with Andy, Karen, Mark, Mary, Jim, Aaron, Alice, Bob K, Marv, John, Vin, Joan, Phil, Pat, Sam and her great horned owls, Thomas, Amelia, Ruth Ann, and Tyler. All right. I'm liking the beard, Vin. All right. I can't think of any announcements. There is a retreat coming up in April. There's probably a book group coming up.
Yes, there is next Saturday on March 20th.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you.
Excellent. And then check the website calendar as well. Make sure you're signed up for our weekly email newsletters if you want to be. That can let you know what's coming. But if you go to the website and check the calendar as well, I can't remember exactly when it is, but on the horizon also is a guest speaker named Gyogu, a Chan teacher, who's the author of a recent book. And so that should be pretty cool. I think that's beginning of April. So heads up for that. All right. So for the sake of the recording and the website posting, we'll call this gratitude as a Dharma gate. So I'm going to start off with kind of a personal story of just how I've been working with gratitude lately. And then I'm going to explore the Buddhist teachings that I know of on that subject. And first I'm going to kind of explain why. Like, you know, so you encounter something interesting in your practice, you find something that works, you know, why explore what the traditional teachings and practices around that might be. And then we'll do that. Okay, so starting off with gratitude. So over the many years, 25 years of practice, I have learned a lot, and I have overcome various obstacles and hangups and things like that. So I feel like, generally speaking, I live a more happy and peaceful and well-adjusted life. But there's always, I guess there's always more growth that can happen. I hope that my path of practice never ends. I hope that 20 years from now, I'm showing up to say, you know what I just realized? So one of the things that I've found, and I think other people will relate to this, that over years of practice, certain things will just, you know, shift fairly easily or suddenly or quickly, and like, oh, now I don't have to worry about that anymore. That's nice. I don't react that way anymore. But then there'll be certain things, certain karmic things that are just more, they're much more difficult to unravel, more difficult to understand. They stick around. They're like their roots are further back in the past or something like that. Some painful way that we respond or act or think that just like many years of practice is not really doing a whole lot to transform. And as I've confessed many times, you know, one of my areas like that is just a kind of driving energy that is focused at getting shit done. And then anything that gets in my way, any task that I don't particularly want to do that demands my attention, or a red light or a caught sleeve on a doorknob or a whatever, or a blinky printer or something like that, will enrage me is one way to put it. I will react in a way that's kind of, it's out of proportion to the situation. And also just in more subtle level, there's just a sense of being, you know, kind of obsessed with the projects and the plans and the to-do list and whatever, and that intrudes a lot on zazen, on mindfulness, whatever, on just, I'm kind of so focused on getting stuff done. And I haven't had much luck directly working on that. Don't be angry. Don't get outraged. Don't whatever. Just let it go. Who cares? You know, I'm just not built like that. That's not who I am. So it's been different. I haven't made a lot of progress on that. But I guess recently something shifted when I asked myself, you know, what is it that I really, really want? So I find like this is when we are doing this self-study, which is the core of Zen practice, there's two valuable things to ask. What is it I'm afraid of, really? And what is it that I really want? And we want to look deeply here. So, you know, what is it I really want? Well, you know, I want peace on earth and I want health. And, you know, there's a lot of things that I want. But at a really like core, unique spiritual level, there's something that motivates this unique creature that when I encounter it, when I think about it, when I resonate with it, something comes alive. I can phrase it different ways at different times. But what I've been thinking about it lately is I want to be grateful for every moment, for every day. I don't want to be so caught up in my concerns and my projects and whatever, even if they're good, even if they're good, even if they're beneficial. I don't want to be so caught up that I miss my life, that I'm not appreciative and grateful for the miracle of being alive. And so when I frame it that way, it becomes not a matter of don't get angry or irritated because that's a bad thing. It becomes, you know, a sincerely motivated interest in like, so even if I'm facing challenges, even if I'm trying to get something done, even if I'm overwhelmed and stressed with too many things to do, I can touch a part of myself that does not want to sacrifice that sense of gratitude, no matter what. And, you know, I'm not saying this is going to keep working. I'm not saying it's always going to work, but I'm accessing a kind of joyfulness and ease throughout the course of my day that I haven't been able to before. So, you know, for example, yesterday was, like many of us are encountering these days, a long day of back-to-back Zoom meetings. And I think, you know, ordinarily I would go into that kind of day with a kind of just kind of grit my teeth until it's all over, even if some parts of it were good, but I was able to think of it in terms of like, wow, look at all these things that I get to do. I'm alive to do this. I'm able to do this. I am healthy enough to do this. The world is heating up with global warming, but we're not dead yet. The flowers are blooming, the birds are out. Like, so it's not a matter at all of denial of what needs to be done or problems or issues or anything like that. It's just like, and at the same time. So I'm becoming intrigued by this, you know, gratitude as a Dharma gate, that, you know, that it seems to be a very wholesome, very accessible, very relatable thing for us to summon, to be grateful for. You know, what can we be grateful for right now, regardless of whatever else is going on? So when I encounter something like this in my practice, and I'm like, oh, that's interesting, you know, this way of thinking about it, this practice. And by a practice, what I mean by a practice is something we consciously choose to do in order to decrease suffering for self or other, or increase happiness, compassion, wisdom. It's something we choose to do. We look at our, you know, how can I act in this situation? What can I think? What can I do? What kind of, you know, meditation or visualization or reading or whatever it is, it's something we do that furthers our practice. So when I encounter a practice like this, then my inclination is to explore what the Buddhist teachings have to say on it. And this isn't because in any way that I need the traditional Buddhist teachings to say, oh yeah, gratitude is legit, that's a legitimate practice, you know, go ahead. I mean, what the beautiful thing I think about Buddhism is that we get to judge for ourselves whether a practice is legitimate. So I'm fond of quoting the Kalama Sutta from the Pali Canon, where there's the Kalama is like a clan or a tribe or a town, and they're asking the Buddha, they say, you know, a lot of holy people come on through and they have teachings and they have practices. How do we know which ones to listen to? How do we know which ones are legitimate? And so the Buddha tells the Kalamas to observe whether a teaching or practice increases or decreases the three poisons of greed, hate or aversion, or delusion. You know, what's the effect on greed, hate, and delusion? Does it increase them or decrease them? So he says, don't go by reports, by legends, by traditions, by scripture, by logical conjecture, by inference, by analogies, by agreement through pondering views, by probability, or by the thought, this contemplative is our teacher. When you know for yourselves, these qualities are skillful, these qualities are blameless, these qualities are praised by the wise, these qualities, when adopted and carried out, lead to welfare and to happiness, then you should enter and remain in them. So in this sense, I don't need gratitude to be a formal Buddhist teaching in order to embrace it as part of the path, but we have an incredibly rich tradition here, incredibly rich. What have our Dharma ancestors said about this? And if they don't say anything about it explicitly, what else do they say that might be related? And you know, how does this appear? So I've always found this inquiry very enlightening. So I will take you on my exploration. And in addition, there's an additional reason to ground our practices in tradition. And that's particularly, like, as a teacher, I'm responsible for this, but also, you know, anybody participating in a Sangha, if you want to be able to speak a common language with your fellow Sangha members, this is valuable. Because there is in Buddhism, there's this idea that there's Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, right, who follow this path of practice, this pretty, you know, that they hold in common, this path of practice, and they achieve a certain degree and they can teach others. There's also something called a Pratyeka Buddha. So that is a being who awakens, to the same thing that the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas, Arhats, awaken to, but they do it their own way. They go off and they do it their own special, unique way, which is great, but it's not something that they can share with others. And so that's what's radical, supposedly, about the Buddha, is that he not only awakened, but he also conceived of this path that we could follow. So the Pratyeka Buddhas might, like, all right, maybe, like, you go off and you do some shamanism and you do some yoga and you happen to have an amazing experience on a mountain and you also are Christian and you're, I mean, that's great. Like, you can have a hodgepodge of experiences and be a very awakened person. But then what, you know, somebody else going to go do that too? Like, now you need to go, you know, go hiking and you need to adopt these several religions. And so anyway, that's one of the reasons to kind of anchor it in traditional practice. So, like, how can we talk about this and share it and make it a common tradition? So that said, as I went, I'm all excited about gratitude. And I've been studying Buddhism for 25 years. And I really didn't know of any specific teachings on gratitude. It's a strange dearth of them. I cannot claim, well, there aren't any. There probably are. But, and particularly I'm talking about, like I've explained to people before, when we're talking about Dharma study, you know, there's like the trunk of the tree is original Buddhism. Not that there's any one original Buddhism, right? But there's original Buddhism that's probably best represented in modern day by Theravadan Buddhism. And then there's branches, and there's a Mahayana branch, and then the Mahayana branches off into things, and then there's a Zen branch of the Mahayana. So in terms of when I'm talking about doing this exploration, it's like you follow back your branch to the root of the tree. So I'm not making any statements about other branches of the tree. But as I go Zen, and then I go back to general Mahayana, and then I go back, that's where I see the dearth of teaching specifically on gratitude. But I found a few things. So the Pali Canon is always the first place I go. The Access to Insight website, and they have a search function, and you just type in gratitude and see what comes up. So there is a sutta called Gratitude, very short, and the Buddha says, now what is, this is the Katanyu Sutta, which means gratitude. The Blessed One said, what is the level of a person with no integrity? A person of no integrity is ungrateful and unthankful. This ingratitude, this lack of thankfulness, is advocated by rude people. It's entirely on the level of people with no integrity. A person of integrity is grateful and thankful. This gratitude, this thankfulness, is advocated by civil people. It is entirely on the level of people of integrity. I thought it was really interesting that this integrity is not something that would, you know, pop up in my mind in terms of, you know, association with gratitude. So that's where I like this exploration of the teachings, where there's sometimes it'll open up another dimension, like, huh, what does it have to do with integrity? And elsewhere in the Pali Canon, the Buddha defines a person of integrity as a person of integrity in his friendship, in the way she wills, in the way he gives advice, the way she speaks, the way he acts, the views she holds, and the way he gives a gift. Now, that just uses the term integrity, so it doesn't help that much, but what it speaks to me is of people who act in accord with their aspirations. So if we're aspiring to walk the Buddhist path and then we act in accord with that, that is being a person of integrity. So that's interesting to think then, if we are acting in accord with the Buddhist path, we are grateful. So the second sutta I ran into was the Mahamangala Sutta, which is a really beautiful little sutta on blessings, or an alternative translation is protections. So a deva, a heavenly being, asks the Buddha, what are the greatest blessings or protections? And so the Buddha lists a bunch of them, and I'm not going to list them all, but he says, not to associate with the foolish, but to associate with the wise, and to honor those worthy of honor. This is the highest blessing. To reside in a suitable location, to have performed meritorious actions in the past, and to have set oneself in the right direction. Vast learning, skill in handicrafts, well-grounded in discipline, and pleasant speech. To support one's father and mother, to cherish one's wife and children, and to be engaged in peaceful occupations. Reverence, humility, contentment, gratitude, and the timely hearing of the Dharma, the teaching of the Buddha. This is the highest blessing. So if you're interested, let me know, but also look at the Mahamangala Sutta. There's this beautiful list of, you know, it's this combination of these really worldly, like, it's one of the highest blessings, live in peace, to be surrounded by your family, all acknowledging all of that, but also like, you know, spiritual aspirations. So there's a mention of gratitude, but it's not a whole lot, right? It's more of a suggestion of a result or a virtue, not a practice per se. So then I did, I have a Kindle version of the Lotus Sutra. So I did a search for gratitude in there. That's a long sutra, one hit. And it's always about like gratitude for the Lotus Sutra itself. So I also, of course, I had to search Dogen, and I came up with something cool in his essay, Continuous Practice, or Gyoji, which I'll definitely need to look into some more on Dharma Talks and podcasts. So he's talking about how it's a long, long chapter, has lots of things, but here he's talking about Hweka, a student of Bodhidharma. So Bodhidharma comes from India, and he's sitting in a cave, and according to the myth, and meditating and not teaching anybody. And Hweka wants to study with him, and Bodhidharma tells him to go away. But Hweka insists and waits outside the cave and just keeps on asking and sits, even though he's covered in snow. And then eventually he takes a knife and cuts off his own arm to show his sincerity. And then Bodhidharma says, oh, okay, fine. So, you know, you can take that with a grain of salt, that story itself, but Hweka was very, you know, insisted. So he points out that without Hweka, without that student's insistence on the teaching, then it wouldn't have passed down through the generations to us. And so we should be grateful. Then he says, most ways of expressing gratitude may miss the mark. Giving up the life of your body is not enough. A castle is not solid enough, as it can be taken by others or given away. The life of the body can be given to impermanence a lord, or a crooked way. Therefore, none of these are suitable offerings. Continuous practice, day after day, is the most appropriate way of expressing gratitude. This means that you practice continuously, without wasting a single day of your life, without using it for your own sake. Why is it so? Your life is a fortunate outcome of continuous practice from the past. You should express your gratitude immediately. So there's not a whole lot more in The Vast Shobogenzo by Dogen explicitly mentioning gratitude, but heck, that's enough. That really feels like he's describing, you know, my recent experience, that sense that it's not gratitude to anyone or to a deity, or it's just, geez, it's just, we received this life, we ended up alive like this. This is the result of so much. And that we express that gratitude simply by trying to be as awake and aware and appreciative as we can be. Not wasting a single day of your life, which of course raises that, what does it mean to waste a day? Can we waste a day? And that's always something that we need to answer for ourselves. I mean, I can tell you what I think wasting a day is, but this is something that we explore. What does it mean to you to waste a day? For me, it means, yeah, I mean, I guess it means living without that sense of appreciation, losing touch with that sense of appreciation, that if I knew this was the last day of my life, I would have that appreciation. Regardless of what happened. If I had a stomach ache, I would think, wow, I'm alive to feel a stomach ache. I would just be like, wow, I'm so glad I'm still here to get in an argument with my husband. Wow, far out. I mean, that's the kind of gratitude that I feel like I don't know, it's a high standard, right? Like no point in getting hard on myself if I don't feel gratitude, right? That just gets in the way. But that to me is like, that's what it feels like to me, to waste a day, to waste an hour if I'm not in touch with that. And what does it mean to live your life without using it for your own sake? And then there's this like continuous practice aspect where I see my life as a fortunate outcome of countless causes and conditions, right? Big bang, gravity, evolution, my parents, the people who grow my food. I mean, I just, you know, the mind boggles. It's an infinite number of causes and conditions that brought about this being, this time, this set of circumstances. But then Dogen talks about this life being the result of continuous practice. And when I think about that, my mind immediately goes to something limited. Like this life is the result of like past Buddhists who strive really hard to understand the Dharma and meditate. I don't know. That just seems like way too limited. So of course, I printed out the part from Gyoji where he talks about continuous practice, and then I didn't take it with me, so I don't have it. But maybe I can manage to pull it up if we have time at the end. But let me tell you, his description of continuous practice is far out. It is definitely not just about a bunch of Buddhists striving hard. He says, you know, the sun and the moon exist because of continuous practice. So moving on. So I couldn't find anything in our like Zen to original Buddhism besides, you know, this mention here and there, but there's a branch nearby. So when I, now what I did is I just Googled gratitude, Buddhism. And what came up, not surprisingly, is closely related. I mean, it doesn't look like it at the outset, but it's a closely related branch of Buddhism called Pure Land, where, I mean, a really rough basic summary of it is that, and it evolved in China, but then it also has its own form in Japan, where it basically the main practice is devotional. The main practice, at least in Shin Buddhism, which is the article that I was reading about, is the Nembutsu. It's the Namu Amida Butsu, and a lot of times it's said with a mala, and you repeat that. And it's, I take refuge in, I rely on, and Amida Buddha is the Buddha of infinite light and compassion. And according to the mythology, he made a great vow and formed a Western paradise that we can be reborn into, where it's much easier to practice the Dharma and get enlightened and liberated. But that's not the gist of it. It's so, to summarize Pure Land Buddhism that way is a little bit like, so it's a crude oversimplification, rather like a description of Zen that says, oh yeah, Zen people sit and focus on themselves in meditation in order to attain enlightenment experiences. I mean, be like, hey, there's more to it than that. So you know, that's like the crude descriptions. Now, I've heard tell, and I don't have any sources on this, but I've heard from my teachers, they heard that there is, it's said in Japan sometimes that the Dharma is like a tunnel, and one end is self-power practice, which is exemplified by Zen, and the other end is other power practice, which is exemplified by Pure Land. That if you go in one way, you got to come out the other way. And if you go in one way. So in a sense of say, like, if you're going to complete your Dharma practice, you're going to have to do some of what we try to do, right? Self-study, meditation, cultivation, effort, you know, that kind of thing. Study. But at some point, it's not enough. There's something greater. It's not just about yourself and how well yourself is doing. On the other hand, and I mean, there would be people who would argue with this, but that if you're just relying, you just conceive of there being an other that is going to deliver you, and you don't apply some of the practices that are so helpful, then you're also not going to attain the same level of whatever. I don't know, I really want to say attain, but you know, spiritual growth or liberation. So there's a really neat article that came up with my search of gratitude Buddhism, Lion's Roar article by a Shin minister named Jeff Wilson. I want to share a little bit of it. He says, as a Shin Buddhist, my primary practice isn't meditation, sutra study, ritual, or precepts. All of these can be valuable, of course, but in Shin Buddhism, our main focus is the practice of gratitude. This sets us apart from many other Buddhists. We don't practice to achieve anything, not enlightenment, good karma, a favorable rebirth, or material rewards. We practice simply to give thanks for what we have received. It's a small shift in one's perspective, but when pursued, it can be transformative. From the point of view of the Dharma, we can see that each being exists within an inconceivable network of support from all beings. Whether it's the attainment of Buddhahood or the simple act of drawing a breath, our every action is assisted by forces beyond the ego self. As we become aware of our interconnectedness, we gain some perspective of our karmic limitations. Accomplishments we counted on as our own successes turn out to be due to the myriad benefits received from others. pulling our own bootstraps, we discover that someone else made the boots and the straps and fed and nurtured us until we were ready to pull. Our own efforts are imperfect and cannot succeed unless countless others are involved. This awareness gives rise to a sense of humility about our limitations and patience in the face of others' imperfections. It also cultivates a sense of humor about our shortcomings and those of others. So Wilson explains how the Shin Buddhist practice is to say Nembutsu in gratitude. I take refuge in Amida Buddha. And he says it isn't a mantra or prayer. It doesn't accomplish anything other than letting out that bottled up gratitude in a joyful utterance. It isn't a mantra or a prayer. It doesn't accomplish anything other than letting out that bottled up gratitude in a joyful utterance. He says, when we say Namu Amida Butsu, we aren't begging to get into the pure land or trying to win favors with the Buddha. We are saying, how wonderful to receive so bountifully. Thank you very much. So clearly we Zennies have something to learn here. And apparently, this is the research that I did this morning, but apparently for centuries, there have been people in China and Japan and elsewhere now who thought we should combine these two these two practices. So they actually call it like the unified practice of Pure Land and Zen. I don't think it's really widespread, but it's out there. So we are trying in Zen and in Pure Land, and frankly, I think in all major spiritual traditions, you know, if you're really practicing them for personal transformation, we're trying to transcend our constraining sense of self-concern and absorption. So all of our practices are really just tools, in a sense, to further us in this pursuit. They're not ends in themselves. And sometimes another tool is called for. Sometimes one tool, it's not used to work, not the best tool anymore. I would never have been able to practice gratitude, I think, in the way that I have been recently, except for 25 years of, you know, self-study and meditation and all the stuff that I've gone through, precept work, karma work. But at a certain point as well, self-power tools can get in our way. So Wilson talks about how the founder of his Pure Land School of Buddhism in Japan, Shinran, was a Tendai monk for 20 years. And he came to the insight that meditation, precepts, and other rigorous practices often subtly reinforce our egos. And his conclusion was that people should throw out all of those formal practices, study, meditation, all of it, and just do the Nembutsu. So that's the other extreme, right? I'm not recommending that, but it's interesting to know that that approach is out there. And it's certainly truth in the observation that our very efforts, our very conscious efforts, can end up getting in the way. But I do think we can wed approaches and use a practice like gratitude as an antidote for the tendency for that conscious effort to kind of reinforce that sense of self, positive or negative. So, I guess I'll leave it there. I was going to do a short breakout where I was going to suggest people come up with a gratitude practice, a specific, like, if you were to give a practice to a kid or a friend or somebody who isn't a Buddhist, and they're like, what should I do? all right, well, sit or stand or walk or and then do this. I don't know. So how about we take like 8 minutes to do that and then kind of come back and share and ask questions and stuff like that. I would love to just, you know, take away from this some actual, and maybe people have already, you know, actually done some practices like this. And then if you find yourself in your breakout room and you don't really want to do the assignment and you just want to talk about gratitude, that's fine. Then just have some comments to come back with and we'll share. So let me recreate. See you back in, 8 minutes.
One that occurred to me is photography. With no particular concern for the result or for the quality of the image, just the act of always being looking for something beautiful worth pressing a shutter at can be thought of as a gratitude practice.
And I noticed there was a theme too in kind of, because there's certainly like kind of an externally focused gratitude practice of like, you know, the various things you've encountered in your day or in your life. But there's also this aspect of like getting centered in the body, in the here and now, in like your direct experience here and now, which isn't, you know, there's things to be grateful for right there, right? Like, I'm not in pain. I'm not hungry. Or I can hear the birds. Or I can, you know, like there's just this here and now experience is worth being grateful for. And then it kind of takes you out of that whole, like all the things that need to happen or should happen or we hope will happen.
I just wanted to say that the sympathetic joy practice from the Brahmi Viharas, for me, that's just straightforwardly a gratitude practice because you're consciously delighting in just the basic elements of your own well-being, like safety and health, and then feeling gratitude that others have that as well. You know, people close to you, difficult people, neutral people, all being. So that, to me, that feels like a straightforward practice. And what I mentioned in our group is as you were talking, Domio, I dawned on me that sometimes that's translated as appreciative joy instead of sympathetic joy too. So just wanted to offer that.
I think if there's any reason that this hasn't shown up in Buddhism in a more overt, like central way, the reason that's not one of the paramitas is, you know, I mean, all traditions have their strengths and weaknesses, and Buddhism has a little bit of a life denying weakness. And so it focuses more on discipline, and it focuses more on ethics and insight and that kind of stuff, where gratitude is like, there is that aspect of appreciation or delight. And it's almost like the Buddhists didn't want you to, you know, get a little, didn't want you to get too excited or attached about anything. But that's, of course, not the flavor of it when we're talking about it like this, right? It's a very kind of open-handed, just, wow, look what I ended up with, kind of appreciation. All right, well, I guess it's time. I will close with our verse. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, bodhisattvas, mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, maha prajna paramita. Thank you, everyone, for being here.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tommy.
Have a good week.
Thanks, everyone.
And greetings, Thomas, fellow bass player.
I noticed your tattoo.
There it is.
Would we be able to see a bass in your background, so on, if it weren't for the screen?
Yeah, probably a bunch of junk too. So yeah, show and tell. Oh God, this place is a mess. There you go. Show and tell.
Whoa. Is that a seven or
that's a six?
Okay.
It's a Tobias. Yeah.
That is.
I just waxed nice. It, but it's still.
Wow.
This place is such a mess.
That's what the screens are good for.
We're tearing this house apart. Yeah, but I'm grateful for having a home to tear apart right now. Times are tough out there. Thank you so much, Domio. This is really, really helpful to me today.
Oh, thanks for being here.
Nice meeting you all.
Everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.